In the second chelik of Shailos Tshuvos Mimamakim, Tshuva Beis, Rav Ashi has a very interesting tshuva that's intriguing both from the perspective of halacha, and as often happens in his tshuva, it's also interesting the human element of it as well. So the question arose in the following way. He first of all, gives an introduction about the time that the Germans first invaded Lithuania. He identifies the date as the 28th day of Sivan, Tavshin Aleph, which corresponds to June 23rd, 1941. And he says that one of the first families that was murdered by the Germans was a particular family where the husband and wife were killed, and they had one child. He says, Benam Yechidam, who was 16 years old, who was saved by the maid in the house, a non-Jewish maid. And then the maid, he talks about how the 16-year-old was traumatized. He actually saw his parents being murdered. The maid saved this 16-year-old for some time, was able to watch over him, and then she felt that it was no longer possible to watch him and to protect him and to protect herself as well, and then she gave him over to the church and to a particular priest. And then, in that context, the boy, without going into great detail of what exactly he did, but he blended in with everyone else. He was able to live safely. But at the same time, Rav Ashri says, and this is information which he was given afterwards, which the boy himself divulged, he felt a tremendous sense of agmas nefesh. He was in tremendous distress because of the fact that he was now in this setting in which he was presenting himself as a Christian. And then finally, something incredible happened, which was that at some point in time, he actually left the church and returned back to the Kovno ghetto in order to live with other Jews. He just couldn't deal with this anymore. He felt a tremendous sense of guilt. He wanted to be back together with the other Jews that he knew, and therefore he came back to the Kovno ghetto. And now the question arose as to whether there was some issue with him. He was a Kohen. So could he duchen? Could he do Nesias Kapayim? Would he be able to join a minyan? Could he get an aliyah? And he would get aliyah as Kohen. Was this possible or not? So Rav Ashi begins the tshuva with a Gemara Menachos. It's a Mishnah which appears in Daf Kuftes Amud Aleph, where it references something called Beis Chonyo. Beis Chonyo was a place in which there was a voda that was set up by an individual by the name of Chonyo, and he set it up. It was in Egypt, and there's some discussion for our purposes. Let's assume that it was actually service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even that's somewhat of a debate. But nonetheless, it was prohibited because it was outside of the Beis HaMikdash, and you're not allowed to set up a separate boma once the Beis HaMikdash is functioning. And it says that the Kohanim that served in Beis Chonyo were not allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. This was a rabbinic prohibition that was set up. And Ve'in Zarech Lomer, the Mishnah says, L'dover Acher, and certainly if they had worshipped Avodah Zarah, they would not be able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. The Mishnah supports this by quoting Psukim from the time of Yoshiyahu in regard to Kohanim who did Avodah on the Bamos. It says in the Pasuk, says explicitly the Kohanim that served in the Bamos would not be able to serve on the Mizbeach in Yerushalayim. Kiyim achlu matzos b'soch acheihem, but they would only eat matzos amongst their brothers, amongst the other Kohanim. They would be able to eat for the Mincha offering, from the Mincha Karban Mincha. It was eaten as matzos, so in any case they were able to do so, but they weren't able to serve on the Mizbeach. They weren't able to do the other kinds of avodah. And the Mishnah concludes, Hari Elu Kibalim, Mumin Cholkin Va'ochlin. These Kohanim that served in the Bamos, they were like Bali Mumin, a coin that has a physical blemish, on the one hand, they would be able to take from the carbon and eat from the carbon, but on the other hand, they would not be able to bring a carbon. They couldn't actually do the avoda. This is what the Mishnah says. So there's a fascinating discussion in the Rishonim that we'll try to summarize momentarily, but first to give a little bit of a flavor of this. Tosfos there, Rashi quotes this, Divramascha lo yishamshu, Tosfos writes there, quoting from something called the Sefer HaZohir, that a Kohen Shehim Ridato, a Kohen who basically converted to another religion, that Kohen is not allowed to do Nisias Kapayim, Lo Yisias Kapov, and he also cannot get the first Loyali Rishon, he can't get the first Aliyah, because the Sefer HaZohir, as quoted by Tosfos, says in the Pasuk V'Gidashto, the Kohen has an added level of Kedusha, and he was mechalil his kedusha. He desecrated his kedusha, and therefore the Sefer HaZohir says, following the example of the Mishnah, that just like the Kohanim who served in Beis Chonyo are not allowed to do avodah in the Mikdash and Yerushalayim, the Sefer HaZohir considers the Nesias Kapayim like to be like a kind of avodah, and therefore the Kohen should not be able to serve. And again, Tosfos also notes that he also shouldn't get the first Aliyah. On the other hand, Tosfos quotes a tshuva of Rashi, that Rashi says otherwise. Rashi says that he's kosher, that he's able to serve in Duchen, if he does tshuva. And Rashi says the reason is because we didn't find a Kohen Bal Mum who's going to be possible to Duchen unless the defect was on his hands, in which case, it would be noticeable to everyone. But otherwise, a Kohen who's a Bal Mum is kosher. So in the Mishnah it says that he's treated like a Kohen who's a Bal Mum. And if you follow the logic of that, then here you have a Kohen who may be considered a Bal Mum, but on the other hand, a Kohen Bal Mum is allowed to Duchen. And Rashi notes that we don't necessarily treat Nisias Kapayim, we see from sources, we don't treat it as strictly as we do in regard to the Avoda. We don't look at Nisias Kapayim with the same level of stringency. So it turns out it's a Machlokas Rishonim. Then he notes that in Maseches Sota, there's another Tosfos. Maseches Sota, the Tosfos there, quotes from the Shiltos of Rav Chaigon, and it mentions there that a Kohen who is Oved Avodah Zarah, again, is not allowed to, this would be like the sheet of the Sefer HaZohir, is not allowed to do Nisias Kapayim, because he's worse than a Kohen Shehargas HaNefesh, the din of a Kohen who killed someone, that Kohen is not allowed to do Nisias Kapayim, and this says, asserts the Shiltos is worse. So therefore, the Kohen would not be able to do the Nesias Kapayim. However, he quotes from Rabbeinu Gershom, Moragola, the famous Rabbeinu Gershom, who said that no, he says in his Tshuvos, like Rashi, that he is able to do Nesias Kapayim. And he is able to get a first Aliyah, since he did Tshuva, as long as he did Tshuva. Therefore, his Kedusha is restored to him, and it says Rabbeinu Gershom the same, that just like a Baal Mum, if the Mishnah compares a Kohen who this kind of Kohen to a Bal Mum, and therefore Bal Mum is able to Nesias Kapayim, so too in regard to such a Kohen as well. And Rabbeinu Gershom explains this. He says Shim lo tomar kein nimseis marpe yedehen shel Bali Tshuva, that if you don't do this, then it's going to actually weaken the hands of Bali Tshuva. In other words, it's going to dissuade them, because they'll say, Oilo Sabusha, Oilo Saklima. Imagine a Kohen who comes back, and now you're going to prevent him from doing a Nesias Kapayim. He is going to feel the sense of tremendous shame on an ongoing basis, and as a consequence, it will dissuade him from doing tshuva, because he'll suffer this embarrassment the rest of his life. And then he quotes various different Mamari Chazal, that Chazal actually took this into account, and they tried to accommodate Bali Tshuva. One source is a statement of Rabbi Yochanan Kolor Menashe in Lechelik Olam Abba Marpi Yedein Shavali Tshuva. You shouldn't say Menashe doesn't have a Chelik Olam Abba. because that will dissuade Bali Tshuva, Tandabi Rabbi Shmuel, Hova, Holach, Zev, Anasa, Kohen, Lavor, Zari, Idche, Anacha, Nofel. In short, sources in Chazal in which we find that they tried to accommodate Bali Tshuva and weren't too strict with them because of the fact that, that again, otherwise it would dissuade people from doing Tshuva. So we have a machlokas between, on the one hand, Rashi and the Sefer HaZoyer, as quoted by Tosfos, and there's machlokas between the Shiltos, who sides with the Sefer HaZoyer, and Rabbeinu Gershom, who sides with Rashi. After presenting this machlokas Bishonim, the Rav Asheri then in his tshuva turns to the Tur and the Beis Yosef, which obviously offers the backdrop for the Psak and the Shulchan Aruch. In the Tur first of all notes that the Rambam also is machmir in regard to this, in regard to Nesias Kapayim, that he says that even if the person had done tshuva, then the person is still not allowed to do Nesias Kapayim. And he also mentions that there's a machlokes, it's most stark in the Tur, that there's a machlokes as to whether if you say that Nesias Kapayim is a problem, in other words, that someone who converted out of Judaism to another religion, that the individual is not allowed to do Nesias Kapayim, does it necessarily follow that the person should not be able to get an aliyah as a Kohen as well? He quotes, the Tur quotes Rav Natrunoi Gon, one of the Gaonim, is saying that the person is not allowed to get an aliyah as a Kohen, just as he's not allowed to, he's in the Machmir camp, and he says he can't do Nesias Kapayim, but he also can't get an aliyah. And the Tur says, how do you know that to be true? That he says that, that in regard to Nesias Kapayim, that's considered to be a kind of avoda. It's considered to be sherus. So maybe just like he shouldn't be doing avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, so he shouldn't be doing Nesias Kapayim either. But in regard to getting an aliyah, that is not related to sherus. That's not like avoda, and therefore he should be able to. So here that machlokes basically breaks it up into three camps so far. It means that you have those who are totally makil, even in regard to Nesias Kapayim. You have those who were totally machmir. They say that Nesias Kapayim and getting the first aliyah are a problem. And then you have a middle camp in which you make a split. The Torah says that you can say Nesias Kapayim is a problem, but on the other hand, getting an aliyah is okay. And then the Beis Yosef expands upon this. The Beis Yosef quotes Rishonim on either, additional Rishonim on either side of this. He quotes that he especially reinforces the position of Rav of the Tur, that there are other, he puts the Sefer Mitzvah Sakatan, that he also holds that you make a distinction between Nesias Kapayim and getting an aliyah. And then, after all is said and done, Halacha L'maisa, the Beis Yosef, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, comes to the following conclusion. He says, really, Halacha L'maisa, it would seem that one can be somech on those who allow Nesias Kapayim, and he says, as we saw before, that v'gam liftoch pesach lebali tshuva, that this is an important consideration, that if you want somebody to come back to Yiddishkeit, right, you want to be able to allow the person to come back without the suffering ongoing bizoyon, degradation, and shame, and therefore one should try to be makil in this case. Then the Beis Yosef adds something which is going to be critical. He says that he thinks that the entire machlokes amongst the Rishonim is only if heimir mirtsono, if the person switched to another religion willingly. The person did it deliberately, willingly, wanted to do so. However, if the person was onus, then he thinks that even those who would be machmir in regard to this, that the person who came back is not allowed to do Nesias Kapayim and may not get an aliyah, he says that this shita would allow the person to be able to do Nesias Kapayim and of course get an aliyah as well if the person was honest. Obviously we're going to see this is critical for our case. So honest means the person was coerced, the person was forced. He says that then everyone would agree that it would be mutter. Only again they were machmir in a situation where Hemim Ritzono, which is more similar to the whole source that we're talking about in that Mishnah we began with, the Kohanim of Beis Chonyo, so those Kohanim were serving, right, willingly. But if it's a person's Anus, that would be totally different. Then it would be totally Mutter. However, in the Bedek HaBayis, the Beis Yosef, subsequent to writing the Beis Yosef, he wrote something called the Bedek HaBayis, the fixing of the house, reinforcement of the house. So, in which he wrote notes on his own Sefer. So in the Berek HaBayis, he then quotes from the Rambam the following distinction, that what he just wrote, that if the person is onus, then the person who does tshuva would for sure, according to everyone, be able to do Nesias Kapayim, that only is if the person was onus in terms of the essential switching to the other religion. But if the person actually served the other religion, right, he actually avda, he was involved in serving the other religion, not just in terms of alignment or identification, but actually served the other religion, so then, even if the person was onus, then the machmirim would not allow the person to do nesias kapayim. So it's that distinction. On the one hand, he says that if the person's onus, it would be able to, even according to the machmirim, even according to the stringent position, the person would be able to come back and do nesias kapayim. But then he says that that only applies if the person identified with another religion, but not if the person worshipped another religion. Then the machmirim would be machmir, and they would not allow a person to do so. So to do nesias kapayim. So now, with all of that backdrop, the different positions, we come to the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Chaim, Simen Kuf Chof Ches, Sif Lamed Zayin, writes that two different positions. He quotes that the Mumer La'akum Lo Yisos Kapov, that the person who is switches to another religion is not allowed to do Nesias Kapayim. And then he says that there are those who say that if the person does tshuva, the person is able to. We saw that that position is the one favored by the Beis Yosef, right? So it would seem that that's, in this context, that that's the position that he's emphasizing. And then, all of this is based upon the background that we saw. He says that if the person was onus, then according to everyone, he could do Nesias Kapayim. And the Magen Avraham adds to this, which we've seen already, the caveat or the qualification of the Beis Yosef. The Magen Avraham says that if the person was involved in actual Avodah Zarah, the person was actually involved in worship of the other religion, so then even if the person was honest, the machmirim would be stringent in this case. All of this we've seen, right? That, as usually would be the case, the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, and in this case the addition of the Magen Avraham, is all based upon the backdrop that we've seen that was provided to us by the Beis Yosef already. Essentially, he'd be willing to be mekil, even though he quotes both points of view, it's not so simple, but it seems he would be willing to be mekil. And then he says that according to everyone, if the person was onus, the person would be able to do nesias kapayim. And then this qualification that if the person actually worshipped another religion, then the machmirim would be machmir here. So after all of this, Rav Oshri says, okay, let's take all this information and let's try and figure out how this applies to this individual. So he says that it would seem that this individual, first of all, we can, you know, take the basic machlokes and the fact that the Beis Yosef seems to be mekil in regard to this and say, okay, so we can follow the mekilim, right? As we saw, the Beis Yosef said that this is, that the mekilim here should be followed. We should rely upon them in such a circumstance when a person first switched to another religion and then did tshuva. Now, for sure, he says a person should be able to get an aliyah, because that's, you know, there are those, even amongst the machmirim, even amongst those who are stringent, there are those who say that it only applies in regard to a nesias kapayim, but not in regard to getting an aliyah. But even in regard to nesias kapayim, Rav Ashri says he thinks that one can be mekel. Why? So he says that, the Rambam said, we had this qualification that if the person was nanas, then everyone would agree that it's okay. Right, so he's trying to explain why, according to everyone, this should be okay. That even if the person switched to another religion, even the machmirim say that if the person didn't do it mitzono, but the person did it because the person was coerced, so he says this individual, obviously, the 16-year-old boy, now he's a little bit older than 16, but in any case, this 16-year-old boy was nanas, who was doing this in order to save his life, right, under the most trying and difficult, challenging circumstances. Now, then, of course, the problem that he's going to raise is, but what about the fact that actually he, you know, was taken care of by this priest, and he was part of the church, and the chances are likely that he would have been serving this avodah zara, the religion. He would have practiced it as well. So Rav Ashri says, in regard to this, he says that the following, and is a critical point, that he says that he thinks that when the individual has described, this boy described how he was so upset about this and was constantly tormented by this. So clearly, even if he was there, and even if, let's say, for example, he had to bow down or do certain things, he did it only, as he puts it, lemaris ayin, in order to show other people, not because of ratzon alev, not because he really wanted to. And he thinks that in this circumstance, maybe the Magen Avraham would agree. And of course, it's Magen Avraham following what the Beis Yosef said. Maybe everyone would agree that it's so compelling that the person really didn't want to do it. He was doing it under duress. That everyone would agree that the person would be, when the person does tshuva, the person would be able to once again do Nesias Kavayim. Maybe the whole discussion in regard to the person worshiping out of a sense of onus is when there's a question mark as to whether the person might have then subsequently done this willingly or in a sincere kind of way, worshiping the other religion. But if it's clear that the individual was doing it under duress and unwillingly from beginning to end, maybe that would be mutter. He quotes something which is quite striking, which we'll come back to later, in order to prove this, and that is Psukim from Melachim Beis, Perek Hey. And in that context, well-known episode in Tanakh, in which Naaman, who is a general of Aram, right? He's like the chief of staff, or the leading general for Aram. He develops Aras. Ultimately, comes to Eretz Yisrael. Comes to Elisha. Elisha tells him to immerse himself in the river and in the Yarden. And then ultimately he becomes healed. And then Naaman realizes that, and says to Elisha that he realizes now that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, and that he basically is going to turn away from Avodah Zarah, and he's only going to serve Hashem. And then, this is in Pasuk Yud Ches, he says the following. He says, however, L'davar hazeh yislach Hashem la'avdecha, that however, Hashem should forgive your servant, bivo adoni beis rimon, ishtachavo shama v'hu nishan al yadiv, ishtachavesi beis rimon. So he says he's sometimes going to have to go with the king of Aram to a place of Avodah Zarah, and he's leaning on my hand, and I'm going to end up bowing down, ishtachavoyosi beis rimon, yislach Hashem le'avdecha b'davar hazeh, that Hashem should forgive me because I'm bowing down to the Avodah Zarah. In other words, I don't really want to bow down to Avodah Zarah, but I'm going to end up bowing down to the Avodah Zarah. So he says that in that case, what's happening, he's bowing down to the Avodah Zarah, but Naaman is saying, but I don't want to, but I want to bow down to the Avodah Zarah. So Hashem should forgive him for not bowing down, for bowing down to the Avodah Zarah, because it's not intentional, it's against his will, he has no choice, it's just in order to save his life. So says Rav Ashri, we should treat the individual the same way as this individual, the same way as Naaman, and therefore, just like Naaman, it wasn't considered to be Avodah Zarah, therefore it shouldn't be considered Avodah Zarah over here as well. And he shouldn't be held culpable, and again, according to everyone, he should be able to do tshuva and then resume the Nesias Kapayim, the Birkas Kohanim. Now, I'll come back to that in just a moment. Afterwards, Rav Ashri goes through another question, which is, what about the fact that we find certain sources in Yeridaya, Simon Reish Samach Zion, where, and Reish Samach Ches, where it talks about a person who is a mumar, who basically serves another religion, and the person comes back, in certain contexts, the individual actually has to undergo a tefillah. The person, it's as if the person has become tamei, and the person has to undergo a tefillah, a certain process, immersing oneself in a mikvah, in order to be able to complete the process of tshuva. So he asks the question as to whether this boy maybe should do that. Ultimately, he comes to the conclusion that no, it's not necessary, because for the same logic, if we say that the person's not culpable because he's considered to be onus, right, and therefore he's not considered a mumar if he's onus mitchilasavad sofo, he was coerced throughout, and he never really worshipped the other religion with any element of sincerity. So then, the individual, in regards to this practice of tefillah, of immersing oneself when coming back after serving another religion, that also should not apply to the person. After all is said and done, he comes to he gets the halacha lemaisa point. He says there are a number of poskim. He quotes the Samim Rosh, the Chemda Shlomo, the Sefer Hasidim, the Ma'ari Asad, who all say that this individual, a mumer that did tshuva, so a person is able to dochen. And again, you can understand why. I just want to review again for a moment that the person in this case, maybe number one, we don't even paskin like the Machmirim. Just remember that the Beis Yosef already said that it makes sense that you should be able to rely upon the Mekilim, those who were lenient in regard to this. That's number one. So maybe we don't have to be Machmir. If we're going to be Machmir, so then there's this question, according to the Machmirim, in regard to Nesias Kapayim at least, what do we do with the fact that the person is Anus? On the one hand, that can be a mitigating factor, and as a consequence, we don't treat the person like a mumar, and the person will be able to do tshuva and come back, and do nesias kapayim. On the other hand, but what if that person actually worshipped the avodah zarah or the other religion? That might be more of a problem, and we have this whole background. But in any case, going back again to the initial discussion, it could be we can just rely upon the mekilim straight out, and then we don't have to discuss that whole question of onus or not onus. It could be that following the mekilim, it would be mutter no matter what. And all these poskim, he says, the Psalmim Rosh, the Chemda Shlomo, Sefer Hasidim, and the Ma'ari Asad, they all allowed the person to engage in the Nesias Kapayim. Now, just note, parenthetically, I haven't had a chance to look into it carefully, but on the other hand, it's not so pashut, this whole raya from Naaman, which Rav Ashi seems to rely upon, is the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which actually indicates that in regard to Naaman, what applied in regard to Naaman might not apply in regard to a Jew. That in regard to a Jew, maybe because it's Avodah Zarah, maybe the Jew is obligated to give up his life, Yiharig Vayavor, in order not to bow down to the Avodah Zarah, and Naaman would be a raya that a non-Jew is not obligated in Kiddush Hashem in those circumstances in giving up his life. He'd be able to save his life, even if it means, you know, even if it means bowing down to Avodah Zarah. It's not so posh in regard to a Jew we would allow such a thing. In any case, that's something which is interesting. That raya from Naaman is not so obvious that because the person was coerced throughout, that the person is not considered to have worshipped Avodah Zarah. So you might explain that Rav Ashri meant something else, you know, that it's still, nonetheless, is not looked at quite in the same way. But in any case, it's not so posh that the Rav Ashri brought from Naaman, because in fact it could be that a Jew would be obligated to give up one's life in that circumstance, and it would be considered like a real bona fide Avodah Zarah. The tshuva concludes in a very dramatic kind of way. Rav Ashri says, after all is said and done, this 16-year-old boy who had gone through this trauma of seeing his parents murdered initially when the Nazis invaded Lithuania, and then he decided that he couldn't bear to, you know, put up this facade, and he came back to the Kovno ghetto with all the suffering there because he wanted to come back to Klal Yisrael, obviously to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in Tov Shin Dalet, he said, when the final liquidation of the Warsaw ghetto, of the Kovno ghetto took place, and this was against what you call a final liquidation, right? So in which the other times they'd killed many, many people, but on the other hand, now they wanted to wipe out the ghetto entirely. So he says at this point in time, he said this, it would be a young man at this point in time, this young man now gave up his life, HaKiddush Hashem, right, together with everyone else. Ultimately, as he knew that this was something which could happen, obviously, but he says, he compares it like to Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva said that Masai Tavo Liyadi Ve'akemena, that he was hoping and looking forward to that time when he would be able to fulfill this and be able to give up his life al Kiddush Hashem. And since this boy, right, put himself in a circumstance in which he would might have to give up his life, or would be likely he would give up his life al Kiddush Hashem, and this is exactly what occurred This is a real, real Mesiris Nefesh. You know, you think about a Mesiris Nefesh in which he was in a circumstance in which he could have saved his life. Nobody knew that he was Jewish. The Germans did not know about him, did not detect him. And he decided to return to Klal Yisrael, to Avodas Hashem, and ended up giving up his life. And then Rav Ashri concludes that he says, that he says that that he didn't separate himself from his brethren, from the rest of Klal Yisrael, and he then says, he concludes with the words, Yizkerem Elokeinu Tovam Shar Tzadikei Olam Vikom Ne'enenu Masdam Avadav Hashafuch, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should remember them together with other tzaddikim and should avenge the blood which has been spilled. And in any case, a very dramatic ending to this particular tshuva in regard to this incredible first teenager and then young man, and his dedication to Klal Yisrael, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.